was just another day at work for Zach. He was probably about 60, and very familiar with preparing for his day. His division were on duty today, so the preparations and prayers are more meticulous than on other days. Perhaps he's wondered what will happen. More likely, he had got used to the idea that someone would be chosen, and they would go into the presence of God and say their prayers. He was probably expecting a normal day. There were so many priests that they don't all get the chance, and when they do, it's their one and only chance. They will never be chosen again. But today, when the lot was cast, it was his turn. His mouth was dry. He was nervous and excited at the same time. I expect he checked to make sure that he knew the prayer for the redemption of Israel. You couldn't go into God's presence and bother him with little things, inconsequential things, like wanting a son. And anyway, Elizabeth was far too old for that now. So in he goes to perform his duties, and his world changes completely. We've heard the story. His prayers are answered, both his prayer for the redemption of Israel and his private prayer, the one he'd just about given up on. Now, an angel appearing today is quite unusual. When was the last time you saw one? It was even more unlikely then. But asking for proof, for a sign, was not the best possible response. So the sign he got was one that was obvious to everyone. I'm going to look more closely at the event that started it all. The lot fell on Zechariah. Was that just chance? Zechariah and his fellow priests would have believed that the lot was cast as a way of letting God have a say in the matter. We do not know the mechanism that was used, what exactly they did, but they did it because they believed that it was God who would choose, not one of the human beings. Today, we would probably say that casting lots for something was a fair way of allocating a scarce resource, or a rare opportunity. We would put the result down to chance, to a random event. The Israelites did not see it like that, in the same way that some Christians don't believe in coincidences, but in God incidences. The Israelites believed that God was there, involved in his world, in the tiniest detail, such as the casting of lots. I should make a distinction here between the casting of lots to make a decision and the casting of lots when each share of the lot is contributed by those who take part. That is called gambling, or gaming in the modern politically correct speech. Is it right for us to pay our pound in the hope of winning millions back? Somebody will win it eventually. But by buying a share and hoping to get millions back, we are chasing after money, not after God. Our purpose should always be to seek after God, to get nearer to him. Riches will not do that. They are more likely to take our attention away from God. Taking part in the lottery may not be such a good idea. But is there ever a time when a Christian would consider casting lots, in the same way as the Jews did? There appears to be only one occurrence in the New Testament where lots are cast. As the disciples regrouped after the resurrection, and the enormity of what had happened began to sink in, they were concerned to replace Judas so that there would continue to be 12 apostles. Two people were suggested, and being unable to decide for themselves between the two, they prayed and cast lots. That is reported in Acts chapter 1. Immediately following, in Acts chapter 2, they receive the Holy Spirit, and there is never another report of lots being used to understand God's will. It just is not required anymore. When Zechariah went into the presence of God, in the inner sanctum of the temple, he was closer to God there than he had ever been in his life. He went there to deliver the prayers of Israel to God. He went into the presence of the king. Now God has another temple in which to live. His people. Do you remember the adverts for the National Lottery? The ones with the big hand coming out of the heavens and a voice saying, "It could be you," as the index finger pointed at someone. Their intention was that you would believe that a benevolent God would make you rich. What happens in reality is that when you become a Christian, God gathers you up in his hand and says, "It is you." You remain in God's hands for the rest of eternity. God brings you closer to himself than Zechariah ever got in the temple. Your prayers are heard directly by God. Your big formal prayers that Jesus will return and finalize the establishment of his kingdom, bring an end to pain and suffering, and your small prayers for the well-being of your friends and family, for those around you. You don't have to go to a particular place where God is. You have become the particular place where God is. God, through his Holy Spirit, is with you all the time, wherever you are. If God is with you all the time, he will expect you to be doing his work as well. We have seen God at work through the tiniest things in his creation. When the lot fell on Zechariah, a whole stream of events was started that ultimately led to the arrival of Jesus, and to his death and resurrection, and to you and I being able to live with God. As an Israelite priest, Zechariah was committed to working for God. When Zechariah's big chance arrived, he didn't realize what was going to happen. Either that he would meet heavenly beings, or that his prayers would be answered in such a dramatic fashion. We too, as committed Christians, are intent on working for God. How do we respond to the little chances that come our way to do his work? Each of us will have been given specific tasks by God. I know what mine are. While I'm in training, it's easy for me to understand. Later, it may not be so straightforward. I'm assuming you know what yours are too. But what I want to ask is, how do you respond to the apparently small chances you have? We all remember Billy Graham, I expect, possibly the 20th century's greatest evangelist. There's a long chain of conversions that led to Billy Graham. Sunday school teacher Edward Kimball helped lead Dwight L. Moody to Christ. J. Wilbur Chapman was converted at a Dwight L. Moody evangelistic meeting. Billy Sunday was converted at a Chapman meeting. Mordecai Ham was converted at a Billy Sunday meeting. And Billy Graham was converted at a Ham meeting. The first person in the list was Edward Kimball. I know nothing else about him, but what I want to ask is the question not who led him to Christ, but who encouraged him to become a Sunday school teacher? What about the others? Who invited them to their first Christian meeting? Or the meeting where they decided to become an evangelist? It's in these tiny decisions that God ultimately makes a difference in his world. Many years ago, we had a mission in Billericay. A large tent was erected on the green, and posters put up around the town. I prayed for an opportunity to speak to one of my neighbours about it, and the chance was given. Normally, I rarely got the chance to speak to him, but that week I spoke to him 3 times. Was that just chance? He didn't want to go to one of the meetings, but he was interested in what was happening and why. A seed was planted. I hope it would eventually grow, but the point of the story is that for once I grasped the opportunity that was staring me in the face, checked with God that it was the right thing to do, and followed up. It would have been easy for me to ignore the situation and miss the opportunity. It doesn't have to be an evangelistic opportunity. It could be a chance to encourage a friend, or just inquire how they are and offer to pray for them. Zechariah prepared carefully, I'm sure, for his day in the temple, but he didn't respond particularly well to his chance. That's probably because he didn't really expect God to do anything. But Zechariah didn't have the Holy Spirit whispering in his ear. We do. What do you expect of God this Christmas? Something immediate and incredible? Like a visit from an angel? Or a chance to be involved in his work? And set off a chain of events that leads to something even more incredible.